You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, my beautiful listeners. Indeed, you are beautiful. And so is this life, if you make it so, right? That's all within our power to make this life beautiful, because it's a mindset, a grateful attitude, combined with a cheerful disposition, despite your circumstances. I got that from Charlie Munger, RIP. And believe me, I know it's a battle. I go to battle with my own mind every single day. Primarily because physical pain affects your psychology in ways that I would have never, ever known until I was forced to reckon with it. And shit gets hard. But I know how many people have it worse than me, so best I can do is maintain a relationship with the man above and serve others as best I can. I tend to pray for those who have it worse than I do before I ask for healing myself. I think I do it naturally, but, well, thinking about it, now, that probably contributes to a better mindset too, right? When you're others directed that way. That said, it still at times takes a Herculean effort to get my mind right because, well, I have mental heuristics that I use, like little aphorisms that I consider shortcuts to getting into the right frame of mind. One of my guys is going through a tough time right now, and, well, not just one of my guys. And as they say, everybody's battling something that more times than not, you won't know anything about what they're going through. It's only when you understand everybody has pain, every person has pain, whether it's physical or emotional, psychological, or a lot of times both. Once you understand we all have pain, it should help you to get rid of any envy that you harbor. And if you wouldn't wholesale swap lives with someone else, your jealousy is pointless. And for all of you saying, well, I take your life, you get to travel the world, you got a loving family, pfft, let me tell you something. You're saying that because you have no idea the pain and fear that I have endured over these past few years. And I would venture a guess to say, if you were me, that if you're not bathed in the blood of Christ and took enough inspiration from those that you do dearly love, if you love them just a little bit less than you should, you may not be here. Probably wouldn't be. I mean, there's no way you'd be here, actually. It was only love and a connection to the divine that I've had since I was tiny that saved me. I met a girl from Australia one time in my travels, and she would talk about when she was tiny. I don't know if we're still Facebook friends or not. I used to see her communist nonsense on Facebook. You don't meet too many non-commies traveling the world, but we're probably not friends anymore. She turned out how you'd expect. Cats, never married, approaching the hill I went over just a few years ago. Anyway, love and a connection to the divine, that all starts in your mind, so you got to get your mind right. Prepare for a crisis before it comes, because it's coming. I should be dead three different ways. But unfortunately, for those who hate, shout out haters, I'm still alive, coming live from the gutter, straight into your AirPods, or if you listen on the ROADS, sorry about my face on your display. If I could fix that for you, I would. I guess I could change the logo of the show and eliminate the picture of me from 7 years ago, but, well, busted, I don't care that much, so deal with it. Your eyes should be on the ROAD anyway, at least until we get self-driving cars, so look away. My ears start burning when you gander at my face. A face made for radio or podcasting. You know where that old superstition comes from? About your ears burning because somebody's talking about you? It's from an old Roman philosopher. I don't remember the guy's name, but he said, if your ears are burning, it means somebody's talking about you. Simulation evidence? Maybe so. I don't know. It was funny. I saw a tweet one time that said, cyberbullying, you could just walk away from your screen, like not look at it, and you're no longer bullied. I thought that was funny. But yeah, simulation evidence with your ears burning when somebody's talking to you. One of my pet peeves is actually when my ears get real hot and I have no idea what causes it. It's not like I feel stressed or anything when my ears get hot. It just sort of happens. That's another phrase I don't like, sort of. You'll only hear it from the overeducated, the formally educated. I took a course by Rob Henderson, and every other sentence that he uttered, he would mix in an unnecessary sort of. He could be talking about anything, like I was drinking sort of coffee and that I got from Starbucks, and I wasn't sure if I should drink it there or sort of drink it on the way to work. I mean, it got out of hand. But we all have verbal tics, I guess. I just don't get, how do you talk in public and not take a look at the tail of the tape and see how you could improve your communication skills and hear all your verbal tics and try to correct for them? Although I should say it's not always easy. When I listen to one of these solo episodes, especially here lately, I don't like how much I laugh, like I just did. My own voice doesn't bother me, which I know bothers a lot of people, don't like the sound of their own voice. I've gotten used to that. And some people love the sound of their own voice, am I right? Any of you have a friend whose voice is real deep, and maybe women compliment them on their voice sometimes? That guy always talks too much, but can you blame him? I mean, you got to put your best foot forward. If women complimented my mustache, I'd have to close down the carnival. Too many ride requests. How can you not laugh at some of my stuff? I don't know. And I've shared this before, but after years of trying to diminish my ego, what ends up happening is you start to see yourself just as somebody operating in the world, like Ready Player One. Not always, but when you're talking to somebody and they say, oh, that's insightful, or how'd you think of that? And I'm like, hell if I know. Where do ideas come from? Can we even take credit for them? And the stuff that pops in our head when we need it? And I don't know about that. The wife and I were watching an old Nate Bargatze stand-up. And in between jokes, every joke, he would say, real loud. His ums would be louder than the jokes he was telling. And I was thinking, this set would be so much better without these ums. And sure enough, the next Netflix special that we watched, my man went to the replay booth and he made an adjustment. It was wonderful to see. I usually tell you what we're going to talk about today, but I guess I went right into it. Sorry about that. I get carried away sometimes. Let's talk about real estate for a minute, and then I'll do some world events. The median household income today necessary to purchase the median priced home for sale in America is $124,000 a year. So you need a household income of $124,000 a year to buy the median priced home, which is 57% higher than the current median household income, which is only $79,000 a year. So that makes what we're living through right now the most unaffordable housing market in history. If you've wondered how the left could possibly assume power again, wait till more young people aren't able to afford a home and blame it on boomers. I was telling somebody last week that the history of the world is the concentration of wealth and resources followed by those who claim to fight for the little guy, fight for those who are in the bottom half of society in terms of economic ability. Because if you're in the bottom half of the population in terms of economic ability, unless you aspire to or even have the ability to be in the top half, some people don't have a mind for it or don't have the work ethic or soft skills, whatever, they just have no possibility of getting in the top half. Those people are going to fight for power, or they're going to have representatives who do so. They're going to elect those who are going to do the Flavor Flav thing, fight the power. The more laissez-faire society gets, the more concentration of wealth you're going to have. Elon Musk isn't just twice as smart as you and me. He is exponentially smarter. He's done more for humanity than you and I could ever dream of. And he therefore has the kind of wealth that you and I could only dream of, too. But how many of those in the bottom half are even willing to admit that somebody's smarter than them? Or understand how Musk got so wealthy? They'd sooner claim that he got rich from exploiting people and wants to steal your Social Security and steal your democracy. I've seen him say that Elon Musk isn't smart, which further proves the point. the stupid person who knows they're stupid wouldn't be stupid. So those people will always be among us. Better to learn to live with them, I guess. But let's stay on real estate. So I saw a post by somebody named Nick Huber, H-U-B-E-R. He's got a pretty popular account on X. He posted saying that he said, fire your buyer's agent or don't get one. He was talking about buying a house. He said, you're at a disadvantage in a multi-offer scenario. Work directly with the seller's agent. Make an offer with 2% credit to seller and 1% more commission for the seller agent. Seller makes more money. You save money. And most importantly, the seller's agent is highly motivated to get the seller to take your offer. I've bought 3 houses like this, and I've watched friends buy 5 or more this way. It is incredibly effective. And somebody replied saying, presumably this person who replied is a listing agent. He said, as the listing agent, I'm not going to do shit for you, and I will fleece you in the deal. 90% of buyers have no idea what they're doing. If you're in the 10% that can handle your own transaction and not get fleeced, then yes, this would be a good idea. To which somebody named Sean Batty, B-H-A-T-T-I, replied saying, I've bought 10 plus investment properties by going straight to the listing agent. You can't fleece someone. You have to present every offer to the seller in a reasonable manner and fully disclose any known facts about the home. Now, who's right? If you answered both, you are correct. Both of them are correct. Because the listing agent's fiduciary is to the client, in this case, the seller. The buyer won't know what the listing agent is required to share with a buyer, unfortunately. So, for example, closing costs, repair costs, commissions paid on comps. All of that can bring the price per square foot of your subject property way down. And while the listing agent is required by law to be fair to all parties in the transaction and share what is material facts about the house, what are material facts about the house, the listing agent will likely, he'll have access to the sort of data that I just mentioned, and the buyer who's not represented in the deal will not have access to that same data, unfortunately. Much of that information is kept proprietary, and I guess you can blame consumer protection laws for that. But almost 10 times out of 10, close to 100% of the time that I've talked to people who've bought their house without representation, which can certainly be done, and you might even want to do that. I don't blame you for trying. But it's not advisable unless you can find a real estate agent who's like, if you can't find a real estate agent who's any good at what they do, what he or she does, then maybe try to do it yourself, but you should be able to find somebody. But yeah, almost, I would say 100% of the time that those who've managed to buy a house without a realtor involved, they believe they got a good deal and saved a lot of money. But unfortunately, they just don't know what they don't know. Because I look into it, and sure enough, they got fleeced, to use that Ann and Guy on X's word. And if you're thinking, of course I would say that, because I've been a real estate licensee for over 20 years. That ain't it, bruh. You should know me well enough by now to know that I'm not like that. I really couldn't care less if realtors make more money. I'd rather see you not get got. You are my beautiful listeners. You want to be mindful that when you're hiring a professional, regardless of the profession, let's say it's an accountant or a personal coach, the benefit you should get should far exceed the cost of what you're paying them. That's almost what implies professionalism. I mean, that's almost what professionalism is, when they benefit you more than what they're going to cost you. Otherwise, don't do the deal. And I said both of those guys are correct, because the listing agent's loyalties lie with the seller in this instance. And their job is to treat their client's money like it's their own. That'd be probably the best way to summarize a fiduciary relationship. If I had to boil it down to one sentence, that's what it would be. Treat your client's money like it's your own. So they're going to try to get you as much money as possible if they're representing you. And in all likelihood, they have extensive training on how to do that. There was a book called Freakonomics I remember reading in my real estate career. I was in my 20s, I think, when it came out. And I'd encounter clients or prospective clients who had read that book. And they would explain to me straight from that book, although they wouldn't say they read it usually. But the book was extremely popular at the time. And I think they started a podcast called Freakonomics, named after the book. And if you understand incentives, you know, a lot of people think that if you understand incentives, you can figure out everything as it pertains to money and people. You just have to know what the incentives are. And that's mostly true. But a lot of times people don't properly identify what the incentives are. So the example in the book was that a listing agent's incentive is not to get as much money as he or she can for their client. And the theory that they posit there, what they do is they back up their theory with a study, of course. So they show you that a listing agent will keep their house on the market longer than they would keep their client's house on the market. So if they were selling their personal residence, they'd keep it on longer and maybe get $10,000 more for their house. While they're saying that their incentive when representing a client, when selling their client's home as the listing agent, they said that their study said that the listing agents sell their client's house on average 10 days faster than they do their own house, claiming that their incentive is to sell the client's house as quickly as they can, because if they sell it for 10 days sooner than they might otherwise could have, they're earning a 3% commission from the sale. Keeping their client's house on the market another 10 days isn't worth it for them, because 3% of $10,000 is only $300. Whereas with their own house, 10 additional days on the market could yield them $10,000. Hope that makes sense. I hope I explained that well. Which it all makes sense when you think about it, if you're dealing with an unscrupulous realtor anyway. But the true incentives are in representing your client so well, treating their money as you would your own, getting them as much money as you can so that they become not only lifelong clients, but they're referring you to their friends and family members and coworkers and neighbors, you name it. So yes, understanding incentives will get you very far in life, but I would argue it's even more important that you be good at knowing people, understanding people, and learning to discern who is self-dealing, who's in it for themselves, recognizing those who would lie to your face for their own self-interest. It's something that it's as old as time, right? People will lie for their own self-interest, for their own gain. But when you're dealing with what for a lot of people is their biggest purchase, the biggest purchase they'll ever make in their life, it's good to have an advocate throughout that process, someone who's honest and who has a track record of doing the right thing. So the other lesson there is I had this one know-it-all client who brought up this argument to me. And he got argumentative, and I wasn't able to persuade him that I was going to look out for his best interests. So we parted ways, which is fine, right? You want to trust people who trust you, and not everybody's going to trust you. Because if you consider yourself trustworthy and someone doesn't believe you, that's a red flag, right? It tells me they're probably projecting, that they're not honest themselves. I'm sure you've had this happen. It certainly happened to me, where somebody doesn't trust you and you're dumbfounded, like, well, why wouldn't you trust me? And then it could be months or years later, you discover that it was they, in fact, who were not honest with you. Speaking of Freakonomics, and I'll tie this into hiring, also in this book, Freakonomics, there's a chapter that discusses how the name you give your child often reflects parental aspirations and socioeconomic status. And it highlights that names, including the variations of spelling that you use for your child, can correlate with parental income and education levels of the parents. And the example they use is Jasmine. How parents with very little education tend to name their kids Jasmine. So they might spell it, they have all these different variations of spelling it. So it's J-A-S-M-I-N-E, J-A-S-M-I-N, with a Z in the middle, and then add an E on the end. So the name mirrors the socioeconomic environment in which the child is raised, which makes you wonder, right? How is it that the most prominent voice of the bad guys team right now is named Jasmine? Well, I'll tell you how. She's a very good actress. She is so good, in fact, that I wonder if her name is really Jasmine Crockett, because that is probably the most African-American name there is. Have you ever met a white person or a brown person named Jasmine Crockett? And she, of course, attended the most expensive private school in St. Louis. She was giving an interview in 2022, and this was before she was elected to serve in Congress. And you could YouTube this video if you wanted to see it. But before she got into Congress, she spoke very articulately and like an educated American. And she just sounded normal, like you and me. How do you go from talking like that to talking like a hood rat and somebody who's objectively racist? She's a wild one, but I guess she's the next iteration of AOC. Maybe AOC is getting a little older, gaining a little weight, it looks like. I don't know, but the thing to know there is something Thomas Sowell has written about. He said that no leader has ever enabled the group that they claim to be a champion for to rise in society, because the way to rise in society is to assimilate. And that's not just in America, that's all across the world throughout history. You want your quote-unquote people to prosper, you'd espouse that all people's lives improve. And to do that, you could, well, if you're African American, you'd start by eliminating the idea of a hyphenated American. Because after all, there's no such thing as a African French or African Brazilian. And Sowell has said that if you help people, you tell them the truth. If you want to help people, you tell them the truth. But if you want to help yourself, you tell them what they want to hear. Of course, Republicans are hoping that this racist woman, Crockett, keeps talking because they want to win elections. And the more this actress opens her mouth, playing the role of some ghetto queen, the easier it'll be for them to win, for Republicans to win. The bad guys are going gay Gen Z or somebody who can talk ghetto when she wants to. But hell, I could do that. Having grown up in the dirty South, I could act a little bit. I used to do prank calls and talk like I was from the dirty. And some people in Texas, they thought that was so funny. Because nobody in Texas can do that talk like they're from New Orleans. Back in 08, I took a class at Rice University. It was a night course about politics. And on the very first day of lectures, one of the things I learned was that those who go into politics often run on the side where they think they can win. So if you've ever wondered how you get rhinos like Lindsey Graham, he's gay, right? I don't know for sure. But it makes sense when you think about it. If you, what I'm saying about going into politics, if you lean conservative in a district served by Nancy Pelosi, for example, you'd have no chance of winning. So you wouldn't want to waste your time or your money. You'd either wait till it's possible that you could get elected or move. I hear Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, I think he's considering moving to Michigan so that he can run for office there. Or Hillary Clinton, she moved to New York. Obama stayed in D.C., which, you know, he's the only president to ever leave office and set up shop in D.C. I wonder why he did that. Actually, I'm lying. I went to the Washington National Cathedral and visited Woodrow Wilson's grave. He actually stayed in D.C. too. He was out of office in 1921, and he was buried shortly thereafter. And he died in 1924. It was February 93 when I visited that cathedral, and I saw the big tomb. And that trip was something. I was in seventh grade, and afterwards, they gave everybody awards for something that they had done during the class field trip, because it was kind of a big deal to be 12 years old and get to go to D.C. And all these chaperones or teachers could come up with for me was that I acted like I wasn't cold despite the freezing temperatures and snowfall. I think it was the first time I ever saw snow, at least snow that collected on the ground where you could build a snowman. Just happened in Houston for the first time this year in January. So when we'd have a quick stop to get off the bus, let's say we were going to see where Abe Lincoln lived to tour the house, I would leave my leather jacket on the bus. Is that velvet? No, it's leather. Anyway, I would get out and it would be snowing and I'd leave my jacket on the bus and just go banging in my white tee. And so they gave me recognition for that, which was kind of stupid because I really wasn't cold. I'm very hot by nature. Hey, girl. No, but one of the reasons I did that was because my mom was a jacket super Nazi. If the temperature dropped below 72 degrees Fahrenheit, I was forced to layer up and wear something that made me hot, like scalding hot, sometimes itching, and I'd be cursing my mom. Well, this was the first time I was ever able to decide for myself whether I wanted to wear a jacket or not. And no teacher or chaperone was going to tell me, Bradley, you need to put on a jacket or you're not going outside. And that wasn't going to happen. So I didn't wear one. I got an award for it that I could show my mom when I got home. Another thing I remember from that trip, one of the teachers encouraged us to buy a newspaper because she said that we would always appreciate knowing what was going on in Washington when we were there. And that kind of thing, well, it resonates with me now, but it doesn't resonate with you when you're a kid. You can't even imagine being in your 40s someday when you're 12 and appreciating that you're going to appreciate this newspaper from when you were 12, when you're 44, let's say. But I actually regret not getting a newspaper from that time. Or at least I always did regret it. You can't regret it now. But the reason I didn't is because Bill Clinton had just become president the month before. And this is February 93, so he took office in January the month before. And he didn't feel like a real president, which most of them don't, right? Until they've been in office for a little while. So I was thinking this young governor from Arkansas is the president, who I didn't know much about. I'm not buying a newspaper. Well, when I got older, I did start buying newspapers for occasions, for special events that happened, like Black Swan. So on September 12th, 2001, for example, I bought a newspaper from the day after. Or when the Saints beat Peyton Manning to win the Super Bowl, I have a newspaper from the day after that. Or the Astros winning the World Series, for example. But all that regret about not buying a newspaper, that was eventually wiped out in recent years because you can go to the internet and see what was happening in 93 in Washington. Or even you can order a newspaper online from the day that you meant to buy one or hope that you would wish you would have bought one. I was gifted a newspaper one time from the day I was born, which was pretty cool to read. The gal who gave it to me, for some reason, thought that I was born in Indiana, not Louisiana. So I have an Indianapolis newspaper from June 19th of 1980, which is June 19th. That's a national holiday now, right? Is that going to stick? I don't know. My dad got in trouble when he was in school. It might have been when he was in seventh grade, I should ask. But his punishment was to name all the presidents in order. So I ask him about every 10 years to name all the presidents. And he still got it. But it's funny, it gets choppy once he gets past where he had to memorize them in school. So he slows down to think. Like he'll blast through like, 40 of them. And then he'll stop and say, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, younger Bush. So I need to, I think it's been about 10 years. I should hit him up for, get him to recite the president, see if he still got it. I think he does. I just read an article, I'm switching gears. I read an article about reusable water bottles last week. I don't know what's crazier, the fact that we pay tons of money for something that is nicely packaged that literally falls from the sky, or the fact that the reusable water bottle market in 2024 was a $10 billion industry, billion with a B. And I'm not above the fray, as they say. I've partaken in both. I've bought water bottles, bottled water, and I have a slick reusable one that the wife got me as a gift for the day we celebrate males who reproduce, which a lot of years happens to fall on my birthday, which may now be a national holiday. I don't know. And I'm making light of Father's Day by saying it's the day we celebrate males who reproduce, but I don't know why I was gifted the water bottle. I don't know which day, but nonetheless, which, if it was my birthday or it could have been even Valentine's Day. I don't know, but I would put the amount of Ozarka bottles, which is my favorite bottled water, I would could put the amount that I've consumed in my life, or at least over the past, say, 25 years since I started driving, I'd put that number of bottles up against anybody. And now we're coming to learn, of course, that there's probably microplastics stored up in my gonads, but I was able to make a healthy child, so I've got that going for me. And that's not, That's not a big thing, I realize. Not unlike the aforementioned pair I just referenced. I kid. There's no graveyard of chins. You know what? Let's move on. My buddy told me a few weeks ago that he loves these solo episodes, but that sometimes he has to squint to get what I'm saying. So I never deliberately go over anyone's head, but if you've been lying about your height in a dating profile, then this podcast might expose you. Hopefully that one makes sense. You can stop squinting now. But speaking of graveyards, so we watched, the wife and I watched John Wayne Gacy. There's a docuseries on Netflix that we watched last week. And holy moly, that dude buried 30 dudes under his house, something like that. How is that guy's name Gacy? Kind of feels like the simulation is toying with us, with Jasmine Crockett and dude who was raping and killing boys. His name is Gacy. Remember Jeffrey Toobin? Harry Sisson? A lot of names that are too appropriate. I'm sure I could come up with more. The best one might be the guy who runs Figure AI. They specialize in the development of AI-powered robots, humanoid robots. They've raised $667 million, I believe, so far, from the likes of Microsoft and Jeff Bezos. But you know what that guy's name is? The guy who runs Figure AI? His name is Brett Adcock. So humanoid robots that don't have any genitalia is being developed by a guy named Adcock. He's building them. Come on. Somebody's messing with us. But drinking so much water, I have memories going, like just driving down the road and having to find a place to pee. Having to find a place to piss. That's a piss for my lovely British listeners, not the piss, which means something different entirely. I'm talking about taking shrimp off the Barbie, relieving yourself of urine. One of my favorite movies when I was a kid was called The Legend of Billie Jean. Who's seen it? Great flick. It was released in 1985. And do you remember, turn the camera on. I'm Billie Jean Davy, and I'm here to set the record straight. Well, when she goes into the house to cut her hair and give herself an extreme makeover, her friend looks over at everybody who's sitting around and waiting on her. They're sitting out by the pool, and she says, she's nervous, so she has to pee. And my dad thought that was the funniest thing ever. Probably because there's a kernel of truth to it. I know when I played baseball, there was nothing I could do to eliminate a little bit of butterflies before my first at bat. And that happened every game, in college at least. And I'd usually pee right before the game started. And for most of my collegiate career, I hit leadoff, meaning half the time I was the first batter of the game. At least when you're not playing at home, that's why I say half the time. But did you know when you pee, you're excreting some adrenaline? Not much, but I think of it like a boxer saying he doesn't have sex the night before a fight because he wants to retain every single bit of energy that he possibly can. And although adrenaline, like the other stuff that I alluded to, is always being readily replenished, if you want to keep every ounce of your God-given masculinity and energy and fortitude, you'd want to avoid taking a piss or making love. Don't J-O before you G-O. Feel me? Don't J-O before you go-go. This is way too much fun for me. Let's talk about what's happening in the world as we speak. I think being the man overseas and all, I'd be remiss if I didn't. So in France, the candidate who is favored to win their next election is about to be thrown in jail. And J.D. Vance was proven correct, 100% correct, when he gave a speech over there in the Eurozone a few months ago. And I'm talking about this for future generations, because those who listen to this decades or a century from now, if they choose to do so, I'd sure want to know what Paw Paw was thinking when the World Wars broke out or the Depression hit. I don't think what's happening now is necessarily comparable to that sort of event, those big events, at least not yet. But it'll be important for posterity to know what we were thinking and what we were feeling when the Islamization of Europe started. First thing you should know, future humans, is that just as in the past, most people have no clue what is going on around us, around them. And that's kind of part of the game, knowing that most people are clueless. Our bettors bet on that. They know that. Because the tyrannical left is doing everything all right in front of our faces. I think they also rely on those who are awake, not woke, awake. The woke are useful idiots, but those who are awake, that they rely on them not understanding human nature well enough, counting on them not having studied history well enough to know that all the misery that preceded us, like Pol Pot or Stalin, Lenin, Mao, Hitler, Ceausescu, Mussolini, many more, that all that was done by humans, of which we happen to be. And it's my opinion, a lot of the stuff that's happening, people don't think that other people would do that to other humans because they wouldn't. But those people don't understand humans, unfortunately. So Le Pen was labeled far right, Le Pen in France. And by the way, you notice that that label is never applied to the left, right? You never hear far left said anywhere. And the tyrannical left, which is beginning to achieve some of its aims, what they first do is label the opposition far right or racist, Nazi, dictator, whatever. And then they try to censor, us, conveniently calling what's said hate speech. So now we've seen it in Brazil. Their opposition leader was banned. In Romania, which is where Ceausescu was, they just nullified their... Ceausescu is from way back when, last century. But they just nullified their election, won by the opposition. And Ukraine, they don't allow elections anymore. Was it Moldova that banned their opposition party? I think I've got that right. Germany tried to ban their AfD party. And of course, when a populist president won the election here in America in 2016, they tried to coup him a few different ways, impeach him, lawfared him, even tried to... And, you know, this isn't something that's, I was going to say kill him probably, but this isn't something that's talked about enough. They tried to keep lawyers from even representing him. Remember that? They tried to stigmatize any attorney who wanted to represent him. They tried to label him as far right and wanted to get them disbarred for taking such an abhorrent client. And, of course, once you lose judges and lawyers, which... we've all witnessed in recent years how dangerous things are getting now that we've got activist judges. Dangerous because imagine being accused of something and not being able to defend yourself. And you go before a judge whose wife or daughter is a big activist for the party that opposes you. Things went so far that the opposition was able to silence their opponent and kick him off of social media entirely, to the point that he had to create his own social media company in order to get his message out. That happened in America. They would edit clips of him talking in a way that would deceive those who aren't paying a lot of attention. And they accused him of colluding with Russia and tried to impeach him twice and get him kicked off the ballot, tried to revoke his license to do business in New York. They found a woman to say she was raped by him 30 years ago. They, what else? Fined him $1 billion or $500 million. Trying to starve him of cash and put him in prison for the rest of his life, which, remember, that came with a gag order, so he couldn't discuss the fraud being perpetrated against him. It was so much. Oh, we had political prisoners for the first time. The opposition supporters were debanked. That's a word that I had never heard in my life until a few years ago. With debanked, that means you can't use the banking system. You can't spend your money. And this not only applied to the opposition supporters, but the candidate's wife, his family, wasn't able to bank. It's funny, I just last week I ran into something like this. We had a little authoritarian HOA board in our community where we live. So a few years ago, during the height of the revolution, the women on our HOA board took me for several thousand dollars. And I tried to explain to them what was happening, and they just straight up didn't believe me. Remember I talked about how people sometimes don't trust you? Well, this was a different era. Hopefully it's over, but I do think they'll be in positions of power, and I think women are probably more evil, especially feminine men, and certain women are probably more evil than straight men, but they threatened foreclosure on me and everything. Talked to me like a delinquent, even though it wasn't my error that caused the problem. I was pretty much helpless, but yeah, they accused me of not paying my bills. The guy who got I got a little internet famous for paying off real estate in record time. Yeah, like, is that guy going to try to get away with not paying HOA dues on a little place I bought back in 04? It was so crazy. They stuck some idiot attorney on me who, I'd be lying if I didn't say I kind of enjoyed the back and forth, to shoot you straight, but the guy was a tool and I kept catching him on his bullshit. But I guess you could say I was lawfared, right, in a small way. It was what I had in writing versus a bunch of nasty women. And my only recourse would have been to go to court, which wasn't something I wanted to stay in the country for. So then last week, I posted something in their little Facebook group that they started because they're trying to overthrow the current board, and they censored me. I was silenced. This fat cat lady who runs the group said that my post was, quote, irrelevant. I had spent probably 45 minutes on it, gathering data that I thought would be helpful to the community, like things they'd want to know about their property values and such, and another 30 minutes writing the post, all this real estate data and information about property values, and this woman wouldn't allow it to be shared. You remember what RFK said? Throughout history, those who silence others are never the good guys. And you probably heard me say before that, like, take $20 from me, but don't take 20 minutes of my time. At this point in my life, I much more value my time than money. So all I can do now is, I guess, make sure these heifers are wasting their time too. But I'll keep you posted. She had even said, your post might confuse homeowners. Well, you know, I've never been accused of my writing being ambiguous or unclear. And why wouldn't you treat homeowners like adults? If they need clarification, they can just ask. Well, she didn't want to do that. She's a little tyrant, neighborhood tyrant. So I'm not going to side with the bad guys. We'll see what happens. I took the L on that first round, and I could have burned a favor with my attorney, but I decided to save that for when a bigger fish comes after me, I guess. Because it's going to happen. It actually has happened. Nothing major, but I had a tenant one time try to bilk me out of quite a bit of money. And then I met her at the property to do a walkthrough when she was leaving. And she tried to work a deal with me where she was going to paint the entire interior of the house. And I could tell that it hadn't been painted. There were marks on the walls and stuff. And so I said, oh, where did you keep the paint? And she said, it's in the garage. And she tried to leave. And I was like, oh, okay, well, stay there. I'm going to go check it out. And I went into the garage and she was getting in her car. There were no paint cans in the garage. She hadn't painted at all. And as she was getting in her car, she goes, is this how you got rich, being a scam artist? It's actually the only time I've had a tenant say that she knew who I was when she was moving in. And I have clients now who don't use their real name. A lot of landlords don't use their real name for this reason. But sometimes, I guess I like a good fight. If I'm being 100 with two underlines, which is how I try to keep it. So yeah, took an L in that first battle, won the second one a few years later. HOA, I'm talking about. So we're headed to the rubber match, and I just might throw some resources at making sure these little tyrants don't get their way. Be the Elon of the neighborhood. It's so funny how all these hateful, intolerant lefties aren't smart enough to know they're being recorded when they're keying cars by the cars themselves. I find that hilarious. If you've ever wondered how they become like programmed automatons who are assigned their opinions and just go off and do what the media would have them do, you notice the propagandist media isn't covering any of this. So they don't know that they're on video. It's wild. So CNN, do your foot soldiers a favor when they find out that you could have prevented them from going to the clink for domestic terrorism by just letting them know you're on candid camera. They're not going to support you anymore. Just kidding. I'm kidding. They're not going to lose their support, which is why you know you can get away with it. Not telling them. How long did it take the quote-unquote African-American community to realize they were being propagandized into thinking we live in a white supremacist country? It took a while. One thing I've thought about is if all the imaginary things that leftists are programmed to be afraid of, if all those things were real, I might be out keying a Cybertruck too. You know, if I had no discernment, if I was an automaton. Because think about it, living under a dictatorship, the end of democracy, white supremacist militias up in the hills just waiting to come down. Remember Biden said if Republicans take power, they're going to put y'all back in chains. He said that to a black audience. Or what else? I saw a picture, a lefty posted a picture of the senators who went down to Guantanamo. They were trying to get our migrant gangbangers back in the U.S. And you know what was glaringly obvious? You guessed it. There wasn't a masculine man among them. It was all very feminine dudes with a woman or two mixed in. You know that Signal scandal from a few weeks ago? Or maybe 1 week ago? I don't know. How in the world does the one guy accused of including The Atlantic in a group chat just happen to talk with a lisp? How is that? I know he's a former Green Beret and much respect for his service. I just think it's odd. Never mind. What about the fella from The Atlantic? Why isn't he treated the same way as old Edward Snowden? Since he claims to have revealed classified information that could have put our military in harm's way, shouldn't he be treated like that? I really don't know. I haven't dug into it. I just thought the whole issue was kind of BS, so I didn't read much into it, but that was just a thought I had. Which, you know, I've said a lot of these leftist dummies are terrible with cause and effect. Could it just be that they never get the whole story and that their source of news knows that about them? They know how they think or how they don't think and can therefore get away with only giving them a little snippet of what's going on? Let me give you a few examples. So I was watching, the wife and I were watching an Amazon documentary called Last Days of the Nazis. It's a good docuseries on Amazon. And in the intro, they say, this is a story of atrocities. It's the rise and fall of the Third Reich, told from a unique perspective, the Nazis themselves. And it got me thinking, how is it that none of the people at the Charlottesville production has ever been interviewed? Like, hey man, why were you there? Or what about the biggest theater production of our lives, the January 6th insurrection? Do none of these dummies ever ask themselves why CNN has never had one of the insurrectionists on their program? Like they could ask, Mr. Insurrectionist, what did you plan to do that day? What were your intentions? What did you hope to accomplish? Okay, so you're going to hold down the Capitol with water guns. Okay, so let's say that were effective. If all law enforcement went home and gave up because they were soaking wet, then what? How do you proceed to take over other buildings and take over the country? It's funny. It's all such BS. Even the far right wing podcasters like Joe Rogan, they don't even have time for that because they know it's all BS. All right, let's stay on politics a minute, and then I'll do Kids Say the Darndest Things. One of the downsides of doing a podcast is you never know who's listening. And I don't like to repeat myself, so if there's something I say here, and then I meet somebody who happens to be a listener, I'm conscious of not sharing a story that I've already shared on here. And I was watching Greg Gutfeld the other night, and he had Tyrus on, which he usually does. And I doubt they listened to the show, my podcast. I'd bet against that. I'd heavily wager against that, in fact. But do you know how many times I've watched that late night show, Gutfeld, and seen them talk about something that I said a few days prior? So last episode that I released, I watched Tyrus a few nights later give a monologue that I've never seen him do about buying Tesla stock, and most of it showed he wasn't knowledgeable about investing at all. In fact, he showed himself to be pretty ignorant, but he did have some takes that were similar to mine on why you might want to invest in Tesla stock. So I thought that kind of thing happens sometimes. It's pretty wild, but I do miss Kat on that show. She had a baby, and one of the things that I think it was the same show with Tyrus. One of the things Gutfeld said that really cracked me up, he was talking about J.D. Vance saying that Kamala would drink 4 shots of vodka before doing a public event. And I want to say he was asking a guest about it. And the guy said that he was an alcoholic and that you do that kind of thing, take 4 shots of vodka beforehand to quit shaking. And then he said she was drinking 4 shots of vodka because she was nervous. And she was nervous because she's stupid. That was so good. I love how there's no fear of being called racist anymore because they're not racist, so there shouldn't be any fear. You ever notice how during the revolution, a POC couldn't be racist and white people couldn't be indigenous to any land? I think that it's probably still that way, right? White folks can't be indigenous to any land. Whites have been a pretty successful minority group. I want to say they make up 10 to 15% of the world's population, white people. But it's been open season on white people for a while. I say white people because they call us WHYPIPO on the internet sometimes. But yeah, it was open season during the revolution. Do you think it's success that gets people riled up? My wife was asking me while we were watching this documentary the other night, if she was asking why people are anti-Semitic. And I was like, hell if I know, but I'm pretty sure that any minority group that's had as much success as they have per capita, it wouldn't be long till those of low economic ability were jealous and hated them. Next question, why do most Jews vote Democrat? Well, how much time you got? You see, there are different types of intelligence. And we actually have a good Jewish friend who has TDS. And you see, when what Trump said in a private conversation on the bus, that when you're a star, women let you grab them by the P word. To me, that was like taking a sip of poison from which some will never recover. Which, you know, back when it happened, I used to say I didn't like it. I still don't, of course. But I know people who talk like that. And so it wasn't surprising to me. I've had teammates who talk that way. And the more I've gotten to know Trump through podcasts and things, if I put myself on that bus with him and it was just me and Trump, and no way did he think that the conversation was being recorded, why would he? I mean, now he would, right? But and he said that to me, trying to make me laugh, I probably would have thought it was funny. In fact, I'm almost positive I would have thought it was funny. Because Trump is hilarious. So I'm sure I would have laughed. I'm sure Rogan would have laughed, or Andrew Schultz. He laughs at everything Trump says. So if you appreciate his humor, I think you'd find it funny. But I understand women especially being revolted by it. A woman was never supposed to hear that conversation. And if women heard all of men's conversations, they'd probably not procreate with us. And it's funny how that was kept under, well, not funny, but it was kept under wraps so it could be the October surprise, because that had happened years before. And then when the other side tried to play their Trump card with an October surprise of their own in 2020, the left had by then wrestled control of all media and the story wasn't allowed to be shared. And they recruited the 51 spies who lied and everything, which that could also be more simulation evidence, right? Trump keeps playing Trump cards. How is that guy's name Trump who keeps winning? The other thing I think about as it pertains to Trump's grabbing comment, we were living through an era where truth was an impediment to consensus, right? Like the CEO of NPR said, she thinks truth gets in the way. Political correctness was synonymous with untruth. And of course, a lot of women wouldn't want to consider if what Trump said was actually true, that high-status men can get away with that kind of thing. If what he said is even what he said specifically, if that's even true, which I'd bet against, you know, that he actually does that, I think he was probably being hyperbolic yet directionally correct, which he seems to be about everything. But that's not something we consider when it could defend him a little bit. And I think he was just trying to make the young guy laugh, which I'm sure he did. But I think they edited the tape there too, right? For maximum effect, if I remember right. And Trump didn't address it at all after the fact, other than saying locker room talk. But yeah, he also didn't try to explain himself for the fine people hoax either. But yes, most women wouldn't want to talk about how many women throw themselves at high-status men with money. Why even ugly dudes like Gene Simmons can sleep with 20,000 women, because he's the lead singer of a band. Dudes aren't feigning at Sarah McLachlan concerts, you know what I mean? Or lining up to get on her tour bus. All right, let's do a Gerwinder, because if I transition from that to kids say the darndest things, that is not going to be good. Gerwinder, let me pull one up real quick. Hold on. Okay, protege effect. The best way to learn something is to try to teach it to others. The sense of responsibility to your students motivates you to understand a topic, and the act of explaining something helps you to connect the dots and commit them to memory. Okay, maybe this wasn't the best Gerwinder, other than to say I totally agree, and that is true. You want to learn something and be able to teach it to a five-year-old and then go back and see what you missed and refine it. And one of the reasons that I used to hear all my life, like a guy would be a guest on a show or something and say, oh, I wrote a book about it, and then therefore he's suddenly an expert. And I was always like, well, that just means you wrote a book. But after having written some in my life, I now realize that if you've written a book, you really have to study the topic. And I know that just from blog articles. So I now think differently about people who write books, and I more trust that they have thoroughly researched it. Not always, but anyway, yeah, if you've taken time to write it out, it just even taking notes on something or journaling and studying your own life, you're going to better learn it and become better versed and be able to communicate it better and connect dots and commit them to memory. So I agree there with the protege effect. All right, let's do kids say the darndest things. So my daughter will set the table for dinner and give us a pretend version of what we're eating that night. So she has her own little kitchen, and while my wife is cooking, she will cook too. And say the wife puts a little basket on the table with tortillas wrapped in it, which she does a lot. My daughter will put a little basket on the table too with pretend tortillas right next to it. You get the idea? So the other night we sit down to eat, and we had something that we'd never eaten before at home. And my little girl says to me, she goes, "That's corn on the cob, Daddy. Not pretend. It's greasier." And I was like, what? I try my best to communicate with a four-year-old, but I'll admit I don't have a lot of experience doing that. I probably use words sometimes that the average four-year-old never hears. And the reason I know that is because sometimes the guys I coach who are in their 20s or early 30s, they ask me, what does that word mean? Which I respect that a lot. Somebody who's willing to ask that question. Because I've always been the same way, and like if I don't know what a word means, I ask. Or if for some reason I'm concerned about feeling stupid one day, which that doesn't happen a lot, but I'm not concerned about looking stupid, I'll ask them. And I've noticed my little girl making words up, maybe to keep up, I don't know, but I love it. And my stepmom, who's great, this happened to me recently, she was talking about somebody struggling with incontinence. And I think I knew what that word meant at one time. But I said, what does that mean? And because I had to do that to follow along in her story, I'll never forget what incontinence means. At least not until I'm old enough to probably suffer it myself. But yeah, if you don't know what a word means, you ask, because just the fact that you're willing to look stupid means that emotion tied to it probably means you'll remember it the rest of your life. And that's what's important. So anyway, my girl says, Daddy, you're not supposed to eat that corn on the cob, like pointing to a portion of the corn on the cob. And I give her the side eye like, you don't know what you're talking about. And she says, that's what mommy said. You can't eat that part. And I'm like, mama don't know. Devour that thing. And so since I didn't correct her, I imagine one day at daycare, she'll be sitting with other four-year-olds and telling them, devour that corn on the cob. my girl hears Daddy use a lot of words. So I think, yeah, she's probably just making some up to keep up. like the gricier, it's gricier. What is that? No idea. But she makes up phrases too. Like she'll say, she'll call me silly man on the wazoo. So remember I told you a few episodes ago, like how she got a saying wrong. Like she said, you're weirding me up. Well, she gets sayings wrong all the time. And for selfish reasons, I just let her do it because I think it's so damn cute. Thank you for tuning in. We'll have guests again soon. If I can do anything for you folks, let me know. Otherwise, I appreciate you listening. God bless. Take care.